And so it begins.
Once upon a time.
I'll make a long story short.
Let me tell you a story.
This is the story.
Story time.
Okay, everybody, we haven't done this yet. This is it's story time. I'm Rara. Hey, who are you?
Hi, I'm Mia.
Today we're going to be playing, what is this one? Mia, what is this one?
This is The Laundromat at the End of the Dream.
That's right. And I made this game at a laundromat at the end of a dream. So there we are. This is a game where you try to get your clothes dry. That's pretty much the whole point. I know that's exciting. I know all of you are thrilled. So Mia is going to have some wet clothes, and we're going to try to dry them. This will be less edited and produced than most Thyad programs are, because they take forever, and this is for fun. Mia, or should we say Ellie?
Yes, Ellie.
What does this laundromat look like?
We see a laundromat at the end of the street. Dream Street, if you will. Its exterior is quite plain, a little dingy, if anything, but what laundromat isn't? Stepping inside, you can see its front made of window panes, cracks here and there, smudges. And as we step inside to linoleum flooring, we hear the soft rumble of the dryers and washers going. We hear the small chatter of people inside busying the space. And as we turn around to look back out to the street we just exited, that is gone now, instead replaced with a endless expanse of clouds, peeking through them, the tips of skyscrapers, buildings, things that don't make sense and do at the same time.
I'd say that all of it is also so generic. Like each skyscraper, each cloud, they almost look like they were carbon copies of what they're supposed to look like. This place very obviously not being permanent with its energy, or its energy just never changing. But with windows this big, it is easy to look in or look out just like us. Do we see you already inside, or do we see you arriving? And what do we see when we see you, Ellie?
Who we see? I think we look over her shoulder, a shoulder of which is covered by a, I'd say, raggedy gray hoodie. It's laundry day, of course, so we're going to wear comfortable clothing, as everything that's nice that needs to be washed is going to be washed. From there, we see a feminine person with dark circles under the eyes, long dark hair that's messily pulled back into a bun, and in their eyes, something that doesn't read as fatigue or jadedness, but something else, something more empty. But she holds her basket of clothes and she walks. Reaches into her pocket, feeling for the change that she needs in order to do the task she came here to do.
It's easy to get the clothes washing. This entire place seems designed for you to be able to begin without much of a struggle. It doesn't look like it should take long. In the corner, you see one of those post-it boards that has a bunch of very generic flyers. Different pastel colors, like an Easter rave, and they say things like work, fun, community, stuff, but without any small describing text, nothing but the large headline. There are figures that move through here. They may be like you, or maybe they used to be. But while your clothes are washing, what are your thoughts about you being here at this point in your life?
Ellie sits, pulls out her phone to doom scroll for the nth time today, but absorbing nothing, really just the activity of it, the routine, something that the muscle memory kicks her into, but not anything that she chooses to do. Same old, she thinks. Another day. Another week, more clothes to do. And with that exhale, comes with it is defeat. And not one at any major loss or trauma, but just emptiness. The dull acceptance that this is her life. Could it change? Sure. Does she have the energy to change it? Does she want to? That remains to be seen. And as she's sitting there waiting, she looks up, looking at the rotation, clothes and colors splashing together, and she thinks for a second. I think it's fine if I would just stay here. If it just took forever. That would be fine.
There is a bell from a place unseen when your clothes are done washing. It's almost like it rings from the lights or it rings from the drains, somewhere here in the middle of what is below and what is above. The turning comes to an end, as it must always, sooner or later. And unfortunately, as you pull out all of your damp, moist belongings, patting your pockets to see what it is you carry, you realize you do not carry enough. Ellie, you need $2 to dry this pile. How much do you have in your pocket?
Ellie looks sadly at the solitary quarter she has in her hand.
Dear readers, in this game, you start off with 8 pieces of clothing that you need to dry, goddammit, and you only have a quarter. It takes $2. So, this is a very small game. It's free if you want to go get it. You roll a die to talk to strangers, and each stranger wants to hear a different type of story. And then we roll a die to see how the stranger responds. Your roleplay could be amazing. They may still hate it. So if you run out of clothes, game's over. If you run out of quarters, you could try to sell some clothes. But once you run out of clothing, you become yet another stranger in the laundromat at the end of the dream. So, dear Ellie, as you are looking around at strangers moving through this space, some coming in, some leaving, why don't you roll me a d8 to see who you first approach and ask for a bit of charity?
That was a 6. Ellie looks around, hoping that someone will meet her gaze so that they can start from somewhere, a connection.
And you see, as described, a sad-eyed queer poet. They are there, folding their Cure t-shirts. You can tell from some of their tattoos that they were in the second wave emo scene at the end of around 2000. You're pretty sure you see a Get Up Kids logo somewhere. But they're pensive, staring out the window, wondering about things like, is Pablo Neruda pretentious, or am I allowed to like it this much? Like bread. But they're not paying attention to you. They are lost in their own dreams. How do you approach them?
Ellie's hands tighten into a fist. Social interaction has never been her thing. But she steals herself anyway because, well, The clothes need to be dried, and she has to leave. Right? So she approaches slowly. Her throat's dry, so they don't hear her at first. She clears it and goes. Hi, so sorry. Do you mind? I just need some change to finish my clothes. I know this is really, really silly to ask, but I come to this place all the time, and, you know, if you come here too, then I can pay you back.
Jericho sighs, wondering about the places we all come to often, hoping to exchange and pay each other back. I might. I don't have it in me to look unless I hear a story about heartbreak. And then he stares back out the window and starts to paint his nails black.
In a different time and in a different place, Ellie might recognize this as strange, but heartbreak. The word ringing out. Is it coming from the drains? Somewhere far away outside? And she thinks on it, moved by it. And she is brought back to a time when she was young. Her childhood, like many others, was not like many others. Her parents, maybe for a time, loved each other, but life will do as it does, and split some apart. So she rarely saw her dad, didn't know him. And as she grew older, that distance, that gap, only grew. And the last time she was supposed to see him, a walk in the park, a movie, something mundane, something got in the way. And she can't remember if it was something on her end that made her cancel, or if work took her dad away yet again. And that was a different kind of heartbreak, because it wasn't loud and shattering, and it was quiet and soft. In a way that, as it separated, like the ocean separating from the shore, to look back and realize that, oh, it's gone now. And she describes this, not knowing that she is, and blinks, looking back at Jericho.
Every nail is now painted black except for the thumbs, which have a small red heart on each one. Do you want to roll me 2d6 to see how Jericho feels about that very personal story?
For the folly. It's a 9.
Beautiful. On a 5 to 9, they understand that the language of the heart is sometimes all your own, and they give you 1/4. So he sighs, hoping one day to be a dad that's not around. And he reaches into his pocket, very careful to not nick the paint on his fingers. He passes over something he would love to give to someone, and instead pulls out 1/4 and hands it to you. Thanks. I loved that like bread.
Ellie kind of stammers. Thank you. She walks away.
And Jericho leaves the laundromat at the end of the dream. Ellie, you have 50 cents. Would you like to roll me a d8 and see who you can chatter up next?
That's an 8.
Amazing. Dear listeners, this game can be played like a journaling game. You just would roll and write out who you talk to, what is said, And then you can also narrate their responses. You don't have to have someone like me. But number 8 is a bright-eyed artist. You see another creative soul drawing a still life picture of the soda machine in the corner that says nothing but soda across it. They're a they-them with one blue eye and one green, wearing overalls that are splattered with all these different colors of paint, like a collage. They don't even seem to have clothes with them, but there is a backpack.
Hi, cool overalls. Could you help me out? I just need some change to finish my laundry.
Change is something I've always wanted too. Sometimes it just seems harder and harder to believe in, but if I had a story about joy, I think that could really do it for me, and I might believe in change again.
Joy. She says that out loud, like the word is foreign to her. Like her mouth hasn't made the sound, formed the word in some time. Joy. There is a hitch of irritation, annoyance, sadness, saying it. Joy. You want a story about joy? I think I might be the wrong person to ask. I'm sure I've felt it in my time. But it's so far and distant now that I don't think I could name it, give it shape or form. But I guess I can try. When I was younger, when my eyes were still bright and searching for what life had to offer, I had a teacher once in fifth grade who was very nice and kind and understanding. Very funny, and I don't know if you know a lot of fifth graders, but pretty hard to make laugh. Mr. Craig is what we called him. He was our English teacher. Very loud and quirky, but that's what we liked about him. That's what I liked about him. And back then, it was rough with my parents and the divorce. How does a child learn about separation and the ending of things in a way that's not just, oh, the dog went upstate? So school became something of a haven for me, I guess. And well, we had this creative writing assignment. Write a 5-page story about whatever you wanted. And so I did. And Mr. Craig actually really liked what I wrote. They said that I had something. And sounds silly now because I was a fifth grader, but it meant something to me then to know that someone saw something in me that wasn't just a reminder of heartbreak or loss. Something that made me look forward to the future. Made me believe in myself. So yeah, I don't know if that's joy. But it did make me happy, even if just for a moment.
They wipe away a tear that looks like it was made of paint, and then use it to smear the last mark along this beautiful replication of the generic soda machine in front of them. Would you like to roll me 2d6 to see if they like your story?
That's another 9.
And while you're making dead-ass eye contact with Bobby, they reach over and take one piece of clothing from your wet pile, knowing that they could love it more fully. They put it into the backpack, and they leave. You are down to 7 pieces of clothing.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, the game's great because you can do a beautiful monologue, and then the NPC is like, I fucking hated that.
Do better.
Isn't that just how people are? So you find yourself here in a place that has given in a place that has given to you and taken away. The left and the right hand, the drain and the light, both represented. Would you like to roll me a d8 to see who enters the laundromat next?
Ooh, that's a 3.
You see an older mask-presenting figure enter the laundromat with a book of some sort of holy scriptures under his arm, easily recognized by anyone who has been lost before. He has a small satchel over his shoulder, but he looks around this space, taking everything in before trying to use it. His eyes lock onto yours, and he smiles friendly. You know those people that always seem to be wanting to talk to a stranger or greet a stranger.
Ellie goes a little rigid, a little off-put by what just occurred, losing a piece of clothing, and now someone friendly and bright and probably loud is approaching her. She smiles like she does, like she's at a job interview. Forced, flat, necessary. And as she does so, she goes, maybe you can help me? I just need a quarter, a dollar, anything to finish my load.
To be able to help someone bear a load is actually a dream I wake up with every day. I have the ability to access certain gifts or goods I can share, of course, but I really do require a story about faith, that I might be inspired to also believe in you.
And she sighs again. Faith, joy, these things. Things that seem to belong to others, just not to her. Faith. Forgive me, Father. How can the faithless speak on faith? As the old debate goes, do you just not believe it exists, or do you refuse to believe it? I think what I have faith in is fact. I know that when I lay down and close my eyes, I'll go to sleep, and that I'll wake up. Most times, at least. I know that I will go to work and do a job that I hate, and that I will have lunch and make small talk with coworkers that I care nothing for. I know that when I get home, I have to check the mail, I have to tidy up and prepare dinner. So is faith just that? Knowing that these are the things that you need to do? I mean, I know that technically faith is believing without fact, without expression, without confirmation. It's about the act of believing without seeing.
His smile never wavers. There's never a look of judgment, just a lot of nodding. How can the faithless speak about faith? Probably with love, like how the hungry speak about food. Would you like to roll me 2d6 to see how he feels about your confession?
I don't know if I care to know. No, I'm just kidding. 7.
You're just hitting middles.
I am. Jeez, I'm very mid.
He is polite, but you can tell he's unmoved. He gives you a quarter and says he'll pray for you. So you see him reach into his pocket and pull out one of those little coin purses the old folks are prone to have. And he pulls out a single coin and sets it in your hand. I'll keep you in my thoughts in moments where I'm not sure how to speak about something. I'll remember your courage and your openness to speak about that which you lack.
Sure. Thanks, Father.
He sees somebody walking by outside with a dog and goes out, before doing any laundry, offering to pray for their pet. Ellie, you now have 75 cents. He had potential to give you 3 quarters.
I know. Dang it.
Hopefully this place will not give up on you, Ellie. And it appears the clouds do not either, as someone else begins to approach the laundromat.
That's a 4.
You see a pretty femme figure pulling basket after basket out of this magic space minivan that is pulled up to the side of the laundromat. There's children's clothes and adult clothing. They look so tired and their hair is falling out of a bun. But they look like they've just been responsible for more people than they need to be this early in the morning, having gotten them all somewhere they need to go, filled with food, and now they're here to do all of this. You can see that they're weighing 1,000 issues in their mind at once as they are getting prepared to start and sort all this laundry.
Hi, I'm so sorry. I know you're probably really busy. I've been here for... And she stops to think. How long have I been here for?
I ask myself that all the time.
It doesn't matter. I just need some change if you have any to spare, and hopefully I can get out of here.
There's an emotion that passes over her face when she thinks about having enough change to spare. Do you have family? She asks, looking at you.
Family. Technically, yeah. My mom, she lives back in our hometown, and I'm not gonna lie, it's been a minute since I've reached out. It's funny how sometimes you don't think about those things until you meet someone who reminds you of them. Well, yeah. It's just been me and my mom for a time. And maybe for a while that was enough. But then I think the older I got, when I became a person, I think she realized that she wanted to be a person too. And in that, when I went off for college, we didn't talk much. And she didn't reach out sometimes. She has a husband now, Derek. And I'm way too old now to even think of him as a stepdad or a step anything. He seems nice, treats her well. And I guess she's happy, but I don't like to say that because sometimes I hate that she's happy because life as it is now, I'm not in it. Not like I used to be. And well, they say that You spend most of your time with your parents by the time that you're 18. And I guess, technically, I got that time. But I don't know. I think a little more would be nice.
I think on both sides of that fence, it can be something to look forward to. When you're on one side, you wait for a little bit of space, and you long for a little bit of space. And then once you cross that fence and look back at what you were doing, you realize now you have a little too much. I don't know. I love what I have, and I love what this is. I just don't remember what it was when I got here. Do you want to roll me 2d6 once she stops disassociating to see how she feels about your story?
Wrangling 10 kids. Oh my goodness, a 7.
She appreciates your story, but feels as though you held something back. She gives you a quarter with a smile, looking forward to the day she doesn't know everything about her children. And then she goes off to sort, because she has so much sorting to do, all the things she carries that aren't hers.
Hey campers, have you heard of season 5 of 5 Gems in a Trenchcoat from Inside the Tent? You haven't? Well, let us tell you about it.
A nice green natural regional park. This is Hidden Falls Regional Park. For our purposes in our world, it's a bit larger than it actually is. It is the summer of 1983, and it is all of your first time getting to stay at Hidden Falls.
We promise it's going to be a great time. It's going to be a story of 3 childhood friends going across the Americas in 1987 using Kids on Bikes 2nd edition. So grab a blanket, make some coffee. The first 3 episodes are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
So here's the issue. I listen to too many podcasts and shows that have incredible sound design. I'm hooked. I'm starving. I need my sweet ear candy. And that's why I love Pocket Bard, an incredible app that makes immersive audio feel simple. You got your ambiance, your weather, your combat, and there's this fantastic intensity slider which lets you change vibes right as you need to, with fluid transitions that never break your carefully crafted encounters. Go ahead, insight check me, or go download Pocket Bard and try out their 20 scenes and ambient locations for free. You heard me, free. If you love it as much as I think you will, look into the monthly or yearly subscription to unlock more of their ever-growing library. With a Bard in your pocket, you'll be unstoppable. Give them a listen at pocketbard.app. That's pocketbard.app. Ellie, you have a dollar. Slow and steady.
Oh my goodness.
You have used half of your options. So if you go through everyone and your clothes are not dry, you also become another stranger. Out the windows, the generic city hums with a generic song. As the miasma of transparent smoke and cloud and fog, whatever this substance is, opens and allows others to come and others to go. Would you like to roll me a d8 to see who approaches this laundromat at the end of the dream?
That's a 7.
The color and shade of the miasma of the world darkens slightly, as we all do, and from the middle of it, a form emerges that is a bit more transparent and a bit more unworldly than most you've seen so far. You see a ghost, a very generic, transparent, Dark eyes, long hair, ghost of an undistinguishable gender. Their skin is already sunken slightly, as though they're also fading away in this form. They move right through the window, carrying their basket of ghostly laundry. All those things we spend our whole life trying to get clean. They look at you, and you don't have to ask, because they are the one asking. They want a story about death. Will you tell me a story about death, about an end, about a quiet finale?
Endings, finales, death. I guess it depends on what you're looking for. Do you want the death of a family? The death of individuality, of childhood? At least that's what death is for me. You see, my life is so sad that it's not sad enough to constitute trauma or evoke pity or sympathy. It's not gonna headline any stories. It's not gonna go viral on social media for how moving and how touching and how relatable it is. That's just it. Can I tell you about death if something was never alive? Sometimes you realize that too late, as a kid, a teen, that the person you are then sometimes ends up being just who you are now. And I didn't realize it then. I thought, okay, once I was an adult, I would be happier. I would figure out life and figure out my place in the world. But I never did. I still feel like I'm 11, sometimes 18, 3. It changes, but sadly, it's still me. A whisper of something that wants to scream but doesn't know how. I think I know, but it's something that I don't know yet. But it's something I dream of. Something I want to know.
And one day, you will. Would you like to roll me 2d6 to see how this ghost feels about that? What was that face for?
I guess dice have their own story. That's a 3.
They are saddened by your lack of vulnerability, or at least how they perceive you, and they take a quarter and a piece of clothing. I don't think they take it. I think you just notice that it's gone, because that's how death usually is. At least for some, there is not the long song of goodbye. There's the sudden snap of a twig that alerts you that something has approached and taken what you love. The ghost goes transparent, standing there, taking what you had somewhere else. Still going to do their own ghostly laundry, they just don't want you to see. Ellie, you are down to 75 cents, and now you have 6 pieces of clothing.
I think, because this is the end of a conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think she becomes frustrated, teary-eyed almost, like even her truth is not accepted. So she heads to the vending machine. She reaches into her basket, hand balling into a fist around 2 pieces of clothing, and goes to exchange.
dear listeners, in this game there is a mechanic that is the vending machine. You can see it over there in the corner with the strange blinking lights. At the end of a conversation, you can feed it two pieces of clothing and it'll give you a quarter. So Ellie, does that mean you are now down to four pieces of clothing, but you do have a dollar once again?
Yes.
So that is five of the eight strangers have come and gone. Would you like to roll me? You know what, dear Ellie, dear listeners, I think now that we're down to three of them left, I'm just going to pick them in an order. Because you can also do that. The game lets you do it, dear listeners. It says you can. Let's go with number five. You see a wealthy couple enter. You know those couples that look like they buy everything in doubles. Like, there's a matchiness to them as they kind of resemble each other in dress and feature. He holds a little dog underneath his arm as she is carrying like a laundry basket of sorts. They look like they're beachgoers, like they're just here for the weekend, probably live somewhere a little colder. Instantly not understanding how any of the machines work, instantly talking to anyone who walks by, assuming that they're help. And she looks at you and thinks, excuse me, do we just give this to you or do we drop it off somewhere?
Actually, yeah, if you can give me a few quarters, I can take care of that for you.
How much does laundry cost anyway? We're not from here. Do you think you could tell me a story about money? Just so I can understand. What is it, $10,000?
Money. You want me to tell you about money? All right. Okay, money. Well, it depends on who you're asking. Because in my life, money is life. And for you, yeah, the same, I guess. But more so in the way that I need it to live. Meaning, I can't get through a week without it. Food, rent, travel, whatever. Those things I need. And those things that you just have by nature of who you are, I guess. How lucky for you. You won the lottery. Maybe literally. And the rest of us, well, for something that's supposed to give you life, it's very stressful and anxiety-inducing thing. You see, my folks, well, first-gen immigrants, so they didn't have a lot of it, and no, they didn't have some business that made them wealthy. No, they didn't strike gold with anything that they tried, business endeavor or not. So we had to scrounge for it. And I guess maybe that's a difference between you and I. Because at least without it, we had to learn about perseverance and community and relying on each other and learning how to live, I guess, without it. And maybe I'm just rambling and none of this makes sense to you, or maybe this is the nth time that you've heard it because, well, all the stories, books, and TV shows and movies, right? They make things, stories about us. Glamorize it, romanticize it. And maybe that's just a thought for you.
Oh, I'm so happy your family struck gold. So how much do I give you? If you would like to roll 2d6 to see.
That's a 7.
I was about to say, there was a chance for you to win the game right then if you rolled a 10 or higher.
It's not gonna happen, apparently.
They really expected something better, and they give you nothing. and take nothing. You hear her counterpart holding the dog. Honey, I don't think she works here. As he, much more of a friendly or down-to-earth sort, goes to approach someone else to ask if they work here. And she has already forgotten your face. Mia, Ellie, this is stressful. Melly.
No. No, no, no.
Leaving that in. Leaving that in, Melly.
As your co-host, I veto.
Probably gonna leave that in too.
No.
How is Ellie feeling in this moment? They may not know there's not many options left, but we never do. But they have certainly asked a lot of strangers for not much today.
Ellie takes a seat again, slumping. And she can feel it rattling in her ears, that rising sense of frustration. Why is it always this way? Because it's not for a lack of trying. I try. I really do. And sometimes people just don't agree. The world doesn't agree. And people say, it's fine though. You gotta pull yourself up by your bootstraps and keep on keeping on.
The door of the laundromat flies open, and you hear the jangle jangle of all these bracelets and belts of a very alt-punk rock figure who really quickly bumps into the old lady and man. Get the fuck out of here, bourgeoisie! And goes to start unloading a bunch of clothes from an old military knapsack into one of the washers. They have like Liberty spikes and a bunch of patches on an old jean vest that they pull off right there in the store and also add to the laundry. You see them taking off their shoes and socks, so you're just wondering how long this is gonna go, but they're not very concerned with anyone around them. They're head bobbing to one earbud as you can hear double bass drum and electric guitar as you hear this music echoing out from the side of them.
I think, spurred on by this display of color and loudness, Ellie stands up to her feet, a little more determined than she was a moment before. Hey, can I borrow some change, please?
Oh, hey, yeah, probably. I mean, fuck yeah. Let me see. And they start patting down these pockets. They have so many pockets in these bondage pants. Like, they're unzipping these little, like, things on their knees that look like fanny packs. Yeah, while I'm looking, do you want to tell me some story about fucking rebellion? Make sure you're not some square.
Okay. I can try. Rebellion. You know what? Fuck that couple. I don't know if you saw them earlier, but this rich fucking couple kept walking around asking for help, thinking that everyone wants the help. So yeah, fuck them. There was an older man here, a priest, a father, wanting a story about faith. Fuck him. And I guess there were a few others that they did help. I wish I could give you more about rebellion, but that fire that might have been in me went out a long time ago, but I guess now at rock bottom, this laundromat that seems to fly, I think I'm reaching the point of nihilism where, yeah, what does it matter? If life is going to be this hard, I guess, do I have to acknowledge it? Do I have to sit there and just take it? I don't know. And maybe this is only a small act of defiance. And maybe it is a little petty and strange that spite is gonna be what motivates me. But isn't that enough? Something to just kick you out of bed, to make you look forward to waking up the next day, no matter how hard it is. Fuck this laundromat. Fuck these chores and these clothes. I'm done.
Yeah, fuck this laundromat. And he like tilts a trash can over, and then he pulls out like a marker, and on the glass of the front of his washer, he just writes, "Resistance is fertile." Would you like to roll 2d6 to see how he feels about what you said specifically, besides fuck this laundromat?
Yeah. Wait. No, it's an 8.
Are you kidding me?
Not.
They don't look at you with disapproval. They look at you with that look on the face where, oh, they're waking up. And they're happy that you're beginning to see that maybe it's worth giving an aggressive shit from time to time. Because that's their only mode. Because that's the space they live in. They finally get done reaching into one of these little pockets while headbanging to the music that's still going. And they do pull out a quarter and give it to you. They also take and give you a shirt that has in bright red letters, it says DARE, as though it was some old program to teach kids not to do drugs. But then underneath it, they blacked it out, so it just says DARE to resist. And they give you a piece of clothing and put in the other earbud, now protecting their space from people who are just discovering theirs. And you have $1.25, and you now have 5 pieces of clothing. The only way you can win, I will say, for the dear listeners also, is to sell clothing right now and then roll a 10, 11, or 12 with the final person.
I was thinking that literally. I think that's what she does. I think she stomps over, brimming now with this newfound confidence. It's okay to try. It's okay to fuck up. That's the point, right? So she'll take that new piece of clothing that she gained, grab another, exchange for a quarter.
Right, you now have 3 pieces of clothing and $1.50. Man, those are expensive to dry.
Yeah.
Sid Nancy is still in the corner, headbanging and doing air guitar. The bourgeois couple is lost over at the flyers, wondering if any of the things are buttons and they can summon help. And an old lady with kind eyes and a bunch of mismatched clothing and a little kind of pulled down beanie hat comes in wheeling a little basket with her laundry in it behind her. You can tell just from her demeanor and body language that she's comfortable in this space. She's probably here a few times a week. She doesn't have a very large bag with her. But she walks over to you where you are to kind of give a little bit of space to Sid Nancy as his air guitar is getting a little aggressive as he's like, "Fuck this laundromat, fuck this laundromat." And she's like, "Oh my." And she goes to where you are with your small wet pile, and she begins to, with knuckled fingers, open up her laundry bag to begin pulling out her items.
I think Ellie approaches her with a sense of urgency. She doesn't know how, but she knows that something will be ending soon, or maybe starting something anew that will never end. She goes to this person's side. Hi, just ignore them. I really need some quarters right now, and I think you could help me with that.
Well, I do have a lawn that I need mowed sometimes, or there's always some chores around the house. Do you need to come by later? I can see if you're good to do some work.
She looks outside of the laundromat, thinking, how do I mow clouds? And she turns to the woman and goes, I can give you something else. I can give you a story.
I would love to hear a story. Why don't you tell me about a story that represents, like, youthfulness to you? I haven't lived in that realm in so long that it would be nice to be reminded what that feels like.
You probably don't need to hear this, but for a long time I've been largely unhappy with how my life turned out, how it is now.
Oh my.
I guess I'm trying something new. We're just trying. Ellie pauses, searching through the annals of her memory for something, a glimmer, a bright light in the dark. And when she finds it, she unravels it, like a flower opening up its petals to the sun. And here at its center, she finds a moment. She is not more than 6, 7 years old. Pigtails and soft hands, little legs to run. She's running through a yard, the smell of hot dogs and barbecue in the air. A family gathering, it seems like. Some cousin's birthday. Or maybe it was one of the neighbors. She can't place it now. But what matters here, what's more important, is that she remembers in this game of tag that she plays with the other children, she looks back over towards the gazebo that sits behind the house, seeing the adults sitting there, a cooler of beers and alcohol beside them, chatting about work, vacations, plans, the kids. And she sees her parents there, sitting next to each other, hand in hand. And it was in such a way that she recognized even at her young age. Fingers interlocked, but not so tightly, not a full grip. Loose, but there. In the same way that she could trust that her parents were there for her, that they would be there for each other. And here, she realizes this is where something had to break. You don't just lose childhood, it doesn't just go away. And she kind of slips back from this memory, realizing that she is saying this all aloud to this woman, and goes, so yeah, youth.
During the talk, she's been slowly moving all of her items so tenderly into the washer. You know, everything's folded so nicely. Treating her material possessions as though she grew up in a time where there was lack. And she nods and listens, trying to remember what that was like, but it was so long ago. If you could roll me the final 2d6 to see how this goes.
That's an 8.
Unfortunately, you can tell she doesn't like somber. She doesn't like pensive. All of her memories of youth are now those distant rose-colored glasses where everything was freedom and energy and health and community, and not this sad solo song that seems to be her way out. And she just nods like, well, I guess that's fine, honey. Thanks for sharing, having already forgotten that you asked for anything. Ellie, even if you sold a piece of your three clothings right now, you would still be a quarter short. If you've asked every stranger and your clothes are not dry, but some remain, you become a part of this place. You will enter it every day, and other travelers will ask you for a quarter. Can you narrate the next chapter for Ellie? And what story will she ask travelers for?
When that woman left and thanked her, she smiled, thinking, "That's fine. I can ask someone else." Not realizing that the next person would only be followed by another. This cycle of asking and trading. Not realizing the time that was passing, how the clouds moved, the sun disappearing behind them. Skyscrapers disappearing out and under like the ocean. I think she moves back and forth, losing and regaining lucidity. And soon she starts asking for stories, because at a certain point she's given all that she could tell. When you're in this place, there are no new ones to write. You can only share what you have. And so she holds on to these quarters, her last three pieces of clothing. And she asks, "I can give you a quarter if you really need it. I guess for me, though, I'd like to hear a story. Tell me something exciting, something new. Tell me a story about tomorrow."
And the miasma that surrounds this laundromat at the end of a dream swirls and fluctuates with your words, with your offer, knowing that you are part of its patchwork. You will be here forever, but you won't know it. And our camera pulls out, leaving this laundromat here in the pinks and the gold, this smoke and fog and the scattered generic city around it.
And so it begins.
Once upon a time.